Hi, I'm Justin Lokitz, and this is the Design Shift Podcast, your weekly design guide packed with actionable insights, expert interviews, and bold ideas to help designers at every level lead with clarity, influence change, and shape what's next. In this episode, I sit down with my good friend and longtime collaborator, Chris Basie, the founder and CEO of Comedia, a sharp, design-led agency that consistently outpaces the Big Four without ever pretending to be them. Chris has helped ship real products for giants like Google, BMW, and Atlassian, all while keeping his team small, scrappy, and creatively fearless. Keep listening to hear how boutique agencies are teaming up to compete at scale, how Chris uses AI as a free teammate to multiply value, and why he thinks design thinking should stop being a ritual and start being a launchpad. Plus, you'll hear his no BS take on why vibe coding won't save you if you've never learned your fundamentals. And if you enjoy this episode, be sure to subscribe to the show and the Design Shift newsletter. Thanks for listening.
Okay.
All right. Well, here we are again with Design Shift, and I'm thrilled to do this today and to have Chris Basie, a good friend of mine and a co-conspirator and someone I've worked with a bunch of times in the last decade, join me. He's the CEO of Comedia, a design-led consultancy with a sharp point of view and a track record of punching well above its weight. And I can attest to that, and you can see that in Comedia's website and all of the amazing big companies that they've worked with. Chris has spent the better part of his career building teams and brands and strategies that not only look good, but actually work. And I think we'll talk a little bit about that today. As the head of Comedia, he's also at the forefront of a new kind of boutique firm, which is agile, creatively fearless, and not afraid to challenge the old consulting playbook. Chris, welcome to Design Shift. And I'm glad we get to talk again just after a couple weeks walking on the beach.
Yeah. No, I'm excited to chat.
Cool. Well, we'll just start at the very start where I normally start, which is tell us a little bit about your backstory and how you first got into design and how that led to Comedia.
Yeah, I mean, I sort of fell into design. I didn't study design. I actually went to drama school. So my big goal was to be a...
No wonder you're so dramatic. Okay.
That's what it is. Yeah. Where the tears come from.
Right.
Yeah, so the idea is like be an actor, be a stand-up comedian, very much go along the performance route, done it since I was a kid, went to drama school, then realized the realities of trying to be an actor is mostly being told no, mostly being told that you're not good enough, you don't look right. And so I ended up deciding that, okay, this is a bit difficult. What do I do? My then girlfriend was like, oh, I'm going to move to Spain, to Barcelona, and I'm going to do a teacher training. You keep complaining about your life, essentially. Why don't you just come? Yeah. Just come for a little bit and see what happens. So I did that. I said, well, I'll go to Spain for a while. I'll do a teacher training, teaching English as a foreign language. Maybe I'll do that and I'll figure out what I want to do. That relationship lasted 3 weeks post to Barcelona.
All right.
And so the decision there was, like, do I stay? Do I go home? I tell between my legs. I told everybody I'm moving to Spain, made this whole big spiel, as you say, fairly dramatic. I was like, well, I can't do that. So I'm just going to stay and see what happens. So I stayed. And after a couple of years of doing that, so this was 97.
Okay.
Yeah. There was an internet room at the language school, which was a big thing, right? We had email addresses. And my friend ran that, and he's like, why can you come in and help me just run the internet room and kind of help me teach prospective teachers how to use the internet in order to, you know, computer-assisted language learning, how do we use the internet? Like, we talk about AI now. It's like, how do we use the internet as this way of force multiplying how we can impact and give information to students? So I did that for a little bit, and then he dropped a bunch of books on my desk one day and said, oh, we need a website. Like, what now? and that was it. And I was like, okay. He's like, just figure it out. Here's some books. We need a website. Here's some websites. Look at those. We need to figure this out.
Yeah.
And then it was literally drawing it out on graph paper.
Mm-hmm.
Drawing every piece out. And then writing it in learning HTML. No CSS at that point. Learning HTML, spacer GIFs, the whole nine yards.
Right.
With Notepad. No syntax highlighting or anything.
Right.
And it was just kind of one of those revelation moments of like, oh, wow, you can You can create from nothing. You can literally just, I can just build, and then here's something that's there that people can interact with. And having that realization that teaching was fine, it wasn't something I loved, but like, oh, I could put my creativity, my creative thought into producing things digitally. And it was the first time I'd noticed that. And then from then on, my career changed from gave up teaching and went into technology design and startups. And yeah, that was kind of the initial start into design.
What I think is really cool about that, and also it's a very parallel path to mine, which is you find that creativity in design, and it starts as code, right? I think I started with some HTML and a notepad, and then there was PageMill came out, and then Macromedia Dreamweaver, which was
Oh,
like,
yes.
game changer.
Well.
But you learn this stuff and you put it out there, and it feels like, well, really, actually, if you think about it, you're going to drama school and doing stand up, right? And wanting people to see and hear you and interact with you in that way. It isn't much different. Here you are, you've turned into a designer, and you while you're writing this stuff in code or wherever it is, right? You're publishing it, and probably even more people see that
Oh
and
God, yeah, way
perhaps
more.
see you through that than they would have, dramatic. But I'm not saying you wouldn't have been a superstar. You certainly would have, but here you are a superstar in a
I
different
think
way.
history would definitely point to never that never happening.
All right. Well, tell us a little bit then, so here you were, you were a designer, and you fell into it and perhaps started to really like it, love it, whatever. Where did Comedia come from? And you found some co-founders at some point in time, and you started to build
Yeah.
something.
So there's two kind of iterations of it. So I met my now wife in Barcelona. She was at the school, teacher training school. So we got engaged in Barcelona, and she got a job in San Francisco. And then, long story short, I arrived in San Francisco. And so I started looking around for tech jobs. I started Sierra Club, which is really interesting. And then my first startup here was a startup called Six Apart. They did movable type, TypePad, LiveJournal, WordPress before WordPress. And kind of did that for a couple of years. And I was like, okay, I've kind of had enough of this. I was kind of like doing little pieces in a slightly bigger hole. And so I decided to go freelance. I was like, okay, now's the time. And epic fit of timing. I decided to do that in 2008. Which is
Perfect timing,
great time. Well, as it turns out, it was. So I got really lucky. So I decided to like, I'm going to create my own company. And that became Comedia, right? Because I was really into, there's an Italian comedic street theatre of the 18th century called Commedia dell'arte. And I kind of was really into that. And I studied that a lot. So I called Comedia because it was like, Comedia, Comedia. Anyway, seemed like a good idea at the time. And so that was kind of my freelance business. And then from there, I started working with Justin Timberlake, Facebook Founders Fund, and did some really interesting, fun work as a freelancer. Then after 4 years of that, a friend of mine started a company, tapped me to come as head of design for that startup. We had an old friend of ours came in to join that, Ken Yang, who started Comedia with me, and Ben Ortel, who's one of the other founders, was one of the developers there. That started to circle the drain. We could see that that was happening. We worked with a lot of agencies. We complained about them. We didn't think they were great. And so we literally made the decision on a walk to like, well, why don't we just do our own?
And there you are.
And here we are. And it's like, what do we call ourselves? Like, what domain? Should we just call ourselves
Yeah, we
Comedia?
already
And
have
so it
it.
just continued from there.
You recycle. Tell us a little bit about, and this we had this you and I had a really nice walk on the beach the other day, holding hands and the whole bit.
Oh, beautiful.
It's beautiful, right? San Francisco summer, rainy and cold and wet, windy. But we were walking down the beach, and we were on this rant. There were a couple threads that I'd love to pull apart here, and I'll start with the first. And I wrote about it last week. And I, by the way, I mentioned Comedia in there too in our talk, which was
Excellent.
this idea of boutique consulting firms. Some context: you and I have worked together on a bunch of projects over the years, both running boutique consulting firms and doing, different things, but kind of working hand in hand. Whereas I was working on business models and strategy, you and your team were working on design and prototypes and kind of zero to one.
Yeah.
Like, there's two parts to this. One is, you know, maybe you could take us behind the scenes a little bit on like what is a typical day-to-day running a boutique consultancy, and then what's something that people misunderstand about, you know, this small consultancy agency that you own. What's something people misunderstand about that world of these boutique agencies?
Well, yeah, I mean, good question. So, I mean, day to day running one is, it's mostly spinning plates, right? It's constantly kind of keeping things in the air. So, pipeline is lifeline for any agency, but especially smaller boutique, right? It only takes one or two cancellations, one or two pauses, one or two, like, which we saw in 2023, we certainly saw in 2020, to really put pressure on the entire team and on the finances. So a lot of it is like BD, building out pipeline. Network is everything, right? So I spend a lot of time just having conversations, right? I think, I mean, in terms of what people misunderstand, is like having these conversations isn't transactional. If you make them transactional, you're never in a million years going to close anything, right? Unless you happen to hit very like, oh God, yes, we do need exactly what you offer. We need that. Can you start next week? Which has happened maybe once in 10 years of Comedia. But it's building out that network and having genuine, real conversations, having genuine interest in other people, what they're doing, what their company's doing, how they see the world, how they see AI, how they see the intersection of physical and digital design. So it's a lot of BD, a lot of those pieces, and then it's a lot of client interactions because I'm usually the point person for the client. Both good, bad, and the ugly, right? That's kind of where they're gonna come to, and I'm gonna field those. And then jumping in where it makes sense into projects, right? If we're oversubscribed, I can jump in and help some of the design direction, or if it's just like we're oversubscribed, do you need me to make some decks? Fine. Like I will happily do junior intern work to move everything along to make sure everything's there. So running a boutique agency is just constantly putting out fires, spinning plates, whatever metaphor. It's interesting in a way that you don't at even a 100 person agency, right? The processes and people in place at that scale, which is still a small agency, but generally people have their lanes that they can work in, and while you cross over them, you don't have somebody running across all of them. Whereas we've split it out, so like Ken does all the biz ops stuff, so when it comes to contracts, legal, etc., I do all the project related stuff and client pieces. So yeah, it's just kind of trying to keep everybody happy, trying to keep everything on track, trying to get more projects through the door, and then trying somehow to find those times to persuade people to build. We need a new deck for this, or we need a new website, like internal website for this. We have this new offering. We want to sell this. I need that, and trying to coax people in. So it's mostly headless chicken, I think.
You think. Well, I mean, I've seen you, and it doesn't look like you're a headless chicken running around. You're usually pretty calm and cool, and
Just
also
feels like it.
super creative at that. Your Comedia is 12 people now, I think.
12,
12, 12 people
we're
between
small.
San Francisco and Vancouver. But your client list does not look like a 12-person company. I know it's, you
No.
know, grown and shrunk over time depending on the on what's going on out there. Who have been some of your, you know, your big clients that you've worked with over the years
Yeah, I
that,
mean, we're still working with Google for the last few years. We're working with kind of AI pieces in Google. We worked with Ericsson, VMware, Broadcom, Atlassian. We work with Winnebago. We worked with BMW. So we've kind of like from our client list is, yeah, we definitely punch above our weight on those. So we have a lot of kind of fun MSAs. And at the beginning of Comedia, that was a lot easier, I would say. The MSA vendor process is increasingly arduous. But I mean, I think we've kind of like tried to have two tracks. So generally have like your Fortune 500 companies, or we have early stage startups. And there's not been very much in the middle. Not necessarily by design, that's just kind of how it turned out. So those are the two tracks. So either seed, pre-seed up to like 4 or 5 million in funding. We can put a small team. We can really kind of like add some jet fuel to what you're doing. Let's get you to the 6 month ramp, like get you to your A. And then the Fortune 500 would tend to be like a more of a standard 12 week, 24 week project.
First of all, why is it harder to get those MSAs and work through those details now than it was before? What makes it harder for someone who wouldn't know what that is or how to do that today, even?
So I think there's even in that drive of efficiency where you have like, oh, we're going to reduce our headcount, right? A lot of people did, especially in 23, and that we still see that continuing today. That's kind of bled into the vendors. Like, well, no, we have a vendor. Like, you want
I
ProMedia is a
see.
digital product agency. We have four digital product agencies already in our vendor list. What do they provide? And it can't be, oh, because I like Chris, right? That's not a good enough reason to get through procurement. And so though we've seen that shrink a little bit in terms of getting in, you can still get through the door, but you need to have a very compelling reason why you should now be a new vendor.
Okay, got it. Why would they hire you? What's your edge? What's Comedia's edge that, here, I wrote this piece and we were talking about the a couple weeks ago, which it was kind of like, there's the big four plus McKinsey and Bain and BCG and, and even IDEO out there. And none of those firms are doing all that well,
No,
generally
nobody
speaking,
is.
right? They're starting to feel pain. And then there's small firms like Comedia that, while it doesn't mean you're not feeling pain, you just mentioned like you're running around like a headless chicken, booking business, doing business, actually jumping in and doing design work in ways that a partner at McKinsey hasn't in 30 years, right? You're just doing the work and building decks and other things. What's your edge? Like, how does Comedia even compete in that? And why does a Google keep going to Comedia, knowing that it's probably also going to some of those other big firms too, here and there? But why go to Comedia? Why even go to a boutique?
Yeah, well, there's two sides to that, the good side and the frustrating side for us, I think. So where we went out, we did this big project with this large company, can't name them, but we beat out between us and one of the big four for the project. And we won that out, and we won that out, and I had the conversation with the client because we showed up with a willingness to understand their problem with a solution set that addressed those things quickly, and we produced a quick within the RFP process, we produced an actual option, an actual page, HTML, CSS designed, responsive, and we did it in like 10, 12 hours. And we're like, well, this is what we can do, right? This is the speed that we can work at. This is the thinking that we have, and we can put this team on, and this team's going to run. Whereas the one of the big four had this big presentation. We are this company. We're X thousands of people. Da 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 da. Oh, and here's a static image of what the homepage might look like when it looked like every other company in their sector. And they're like, "Well, that's why you won, because you showed that you were prepared to put the work in to understand who we are and what we need from the beginning, not spend the first 3 months doing a discovery project where you kind of have a beautiful PDF at the end of it, and then you start the work." So I think where Comedia has always won out was our speed of execution. So we would always be like, look, we'll go from zero to one faster than anybody else, but we will always be the makers of the thing, right? We're not going to present you with, here's some static comps, here's a PDF, here's a deck. It's like, here's the thing you asked for in that mobile app, on a mobile app. We'll
On a
send it to you on
mobile
test
app, it
flight.
works.
You can play with it, right? Along narrative paths, it's not fully featured, but these are the things you said you wanted to do. This now works. And so that's always been our kind of niche around, kind of especially in the first few years. As you know, we were an innovation studio initially. That was kind of our first 5 years of Comedia. And we would jump in and create a lot of work very, very quickly. And then use that to jump, oh, okay, now we'll build the MVP and now we can take that to commercialization. So that ability to jump in, understand complex ideas quickly and find the simplicity in that complexity was kind of our niche. That was always kind of our unique selling point, for want of a better term.
And I've seen you on the job and you and some of your team too, right? And co-founders as well. I think it's that jumping in, and this is what we were talking about as well. It's that jumping in. On one side, and it's not, I think we're generalizing here to say that, at a McKinsey or a
Oh, for
Bain,
sure. Yeah,
that
yeah,
Bain, they don't jump in. They certainly do at an associate's level, right? A junior level,
yeah. I think
They'll do
I think
that.
their structure makes that difficult
Their
to
structure
be
makes it
effective.
difficult. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Okay. So their structure makes it difficult. On the other side, and I've seen you work because we've been in those projects. When you say jump in, you just do it, right? You bolt yourself onto the client team, and now it's you and the clients, and as one co-creating and just making things. And here you come with a special set of skills, right, that enable you all to do that really quickly, and for real, right? Some of the projects I remember, we worked on, real mobile apps that look real, feel real. They're not just, clickable prototypes. And this is, 7, 8 years ago, you were
That's a while
building
ago.
those things. So it feels like there's a lot there. So here, I'll turn it around another way. When you think about it, and you started out as an innovation agency, and sort of became, what do you call yourself? Is it a design agency, design
Yeah,
consultancy,
digital product agency.
digital product
We
agency, right?
struggle with that now, but yes, that's where we've
Okay.
landed for now.
All right, that's great. Okay, so digital product agency, and in that, of course, there's design and there's, the actual creation of the product and so forth. If I take you back a bit to where you started in design and even where Comedia is today, specifically in design, what is design? And then even maybe you can add on to it, what is product? But what does design then mean today in 2025, knowing what you know?
Oh, it's a big question.
I'm not here to ask
Design
lightweight
is
questions.
yeah, design's interesting. Design's in a really interesting place. What is it? Like, history doesn't repeat, it rhymes. Because I think where you look at AI, and there's a lot of frothiness obviously around AI, and everyone talks about AI. I've written God knows how many articles around design and AI recently. And I think what's interesting is there's an expectation now that if you're a designer, you have at least the ability to prompt your way into something tangible. As we talked about, I think there's inherent dangers in that. But if I go back to when what we talked about at the very beginning, when I first started, to be a designer meant that you had to be able to write HTML and CSS and JavaScript.
Right.
The expectation, nobody knew how to do any of this
That's
stuff
funny.
in 96, 97, so you had to do all of it, and you just had to figure it out, right? And so if you look back at early 2000s, Dan Cederholm of the world, right, who were kind of Doug Bowman, who kind of built all, like, our CSS sliding doors, this is how you have tabs that will. And all of that was design. It was all design led, but it was all code. Well, not code. It was all markup and style sheets. And if you look now, when you fast forward to now, it's similar in the sense of, like, if you don't have an understanding of how product and your design is going to be put into a product, then you don't have an understanding of how your design is going to work. So I think design now is an expectation of understanding holistically end to end what product looks like. And I think we went niche for ages. And it's interesting to see where this will net out, because, again, I was a webmaster, still my favorite job title ever,
Webmaster,
right? Was
yes.
webmaster. But you had to do all these different things, right? The idea of being, oh, I'm just a UX designer. It's like, what do you mean you're just a UX? Well, in terms, it didn't exist. But, like, oh, you just do that one thing. It's like, no, of course you don't do that one thing. And for we kind of went into this niche thing. So now your design team had UX design, UX research, UI design, interaction design, visual design. And I think that's starting to coalesce a little bit more into the role where you're expected to be able to cross between all of those pieces. So I think what AI is doing in that sense is interesting, because it's forcing design to understand holistic product. And where do you fit into that as design? If you think of design as the workflows, the UI, the interactions, but then how does that then translate into whatever form factor you're building product for?
That's profound. It's something that another friend and someone I had on this podcast, newsletter, James Song, said something similar, which was, I think we all know
Okay, I know,
James.
just recently, yeah.
So we all like he said something similar, which is, design is this ability now, at least, and I think he was also saying even before, but this ability to see the whole experience from the even before the beginning, the inception of something to, someone doing something to the very end. And I like what you're adding on to that, which is it's not just the experience, but it's how that experience gets made. So yeah, it's the history is rhyming thing. You started out with a notepad coding HTML and, you know, coding your way to being a webmaster. It's HTML, but still it's abstract.
Yeah, you have to learn how to write it.
You have to learn how to write it. It's abstract. It's a totally different concept than just talking like this. Went away. We had Figma and, you know, and, which is great, you know, InDesign and InVision. InDesign. And then, you know, I think InVision was the next. And then, of course, Figma.
Yeah, to be able to do the prototypes.
Yeah, the prototypes and Figma. And here we are in a place where, oh, well, perhaps we need to know more than that. Yeah, I think it's really interesting and profound to hear you say that. You know, I think the other thing we talked about is, and we can have a healthy argument about it too. There's a world where, you know, everyone claims to be able to do design thinking, right? Which is, you know, design thinking with Post-its, and now I'm a designer.
Yep.
What makes design matter in that world or stand out in that world from design thinking to big D design, product design, so forth?
Yeah, I mean, yes. So design thinking is interesting, right? I think as a practice, I think kind of IDEO did well to create agency based around it. And it makes sense, and a lot of it makes sense. I think the theater of it is less useful. And I think that has kind of borne out recently of people going like, wait, hang on, I'm paying how much for this? And I've got a series of Post-it notes, and you're not actually going to do this. I need to go to another agency now to build this. And there's a lot of design thinking and that's kind of, a lot of that seems like common sense.
Yeah.
It just needs a good facilitator to help people get through it. So I think the design thinking is great, and I think it still needs to be part of any project, or certainly any biggest project. Design thinking needs to be the first part of that. I'm not sure we call it design thinking anymore.
Okay, yeah.
I think it's just the kickoff.
Oh, yeah, got it, yeah. Project kickoff, where you're facilitating, getting everyone on the same page. Yeah,
we're going to do one or two longer meetings.
Yeah.
We're going to run through, and we'll do all the stuff, the how might we, the affinity mapping,
right.
All that stuff. But rather than it being a separate, this is the project of the design thinking project. Now here's the project of taking those and synthesizing those and creating a backlog. And now from here, we're going to then kind of create, it's like, okay, this is just a through line now.
Sure.
We'll kick those things off. We'll get a good sense of what is needed and we'll get started.
Yeah, that makes total sense. It reminds me of the guys who wrote Sprint, right? The design sprint from the guys from Google.
The Google, yeah.
Names Jake of Knapp. Jake Knapp, yeah. Jake Knapp and John Zersky, but yeah. Jake Knapp. In fact, they just came out with a new book called Click. And that's very much the way they talk about that, which is, it's a kickoff. It's a way to get people aligned, right? You're still using the Post-its because it's, you know, creating together alone, right? So you can still put your thoughts on things and vote, but only to get to a place where you're actually creating something that someone can interact with, whether it's physical or digital or something else.
I think it's the output, The output has shifted
of what
the output needs to be. And again, I think it goes back to like the big consultancies versus boutique agencies, right? Of boutique agencies are there to get stuff done.
Yeah. Okay.
Whereas consultancy, like, no, because we don't have this huge, and they're not necessarily wrong either, right? You need this huge holistic idea. We need to have this umbrella so that as we go down the pillars, we're anchored to something, which also does make sense. But it depends on what the clients ultimately want or what their budgetary appetite is.
Yeah. Well, so here we are, and you already mentioned it. You know, we're in the age of AI. We got here quick, and it's taken over just as quickly. AI friend, foe, something else to Comedia and boutique, you know, product agencies like Comedia?
I think mostly friend. It's going to be interesting. I think, I mean, we talked about this the other week, and I still think it's true. The more I think about it, that in a year or so, we'll stop talking about things being AI powered, AI enabled, right? It's table
Yeah.
stakes. Like, yeah, of course. It's like saying your website's on the internet, right? Yeah,
Right.
sure.
Right.
Right?
Right.
There's AI embedded in here somewhere. I think a lot of the frothiness around, oh, they're coming to take our jobs is interesting. I think I can definitely see that argument. But I think ultimately you need humans at the end of this loop. It's just a box. It's a little black box. It's not magic. It will mirror and amplify whatever you put into it. So if you don't have good inputs going in, you're going to have bad inputs,
Yeah.
bad outputs at the end of it, right? And so you need the better inputs to come in, take those better outputs, and then elevate them back up, right? And that is a human, that is a design, that is a technologist, that is that piece. If you think of AI as removing designers, developers out of the equation, you're going to start to see this real homogenization of everything again. There's no differentiation. And is that something that we want to have? We've had that before, right? Again, to a lesser extent, we've seen this movie with UI kits, right? The big UI kits. And then
Ah,
there's design
yes.
systems,
Yeah, good one.
right? And it's like,
Yeah.
great, we've got a design system. So clack, 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 clack. We don't need designers anymore. We've got a design system. I'm going to build all these things. And then they start building. They're like, oh, I need a designer because this flow doesn't work. Or, oh, I need this different component. Or we need to redo some of the branding pieces. And so this is kind of like that on steroids, admittedly. But I think AI is a great tool. I don't think it's a replacement. I don't think it can be a replacement. Because if you don't know what you're doing, you don't know what you're doing. You can't just sit at a input and go like, well, create me an app that does these things. Boom. Because it's not going to work. It's not going to do the things you want it to do. You're not going to understand how to prompt your way out of issues. And so I think I was going to be prompt engineers. I think, well, I don't know. I think design's going to be more important than ever. I think if you don't know your fundamentals, you're going to get into real trouble real quickly trying to vibe code your way out of it. Because if you don't understand why something's not working, you can't possibly fix it. The AI can't fix it because, again, it's just amplifying you.
Right.
And so I would be worried if I was coming out of design school. I would be concerned
Yeah.
around what is my role in that. And I think kind of being AI native makes sense. But I would also say, like, okay, learn your color theory, learn typography, learn your grids, learn all the basics, your 101s around design, because that will serve you more than the 90% of people who think they can vibe code their way into a new job or vibe
Right.
code their way to the end of a project. And I think kind of like Ben, our head of engineering, right? I use this line of his a lot. He's like, well, vibe coding's great. Now try vibe deploying.
Oh yeah.
Right? And it's a different beast,
Yeah,
right? If you're
yeah.
talking about the Googles of the world or Atlassian or Vodafone or any of those, the scale at which they need to produce, AI can help. It can make things faster. But if you haven't built that correctly from the foundations up, AI is just going to be vaporware.
Yeah,
And
yeah.
so I think AI is very useful. It's a great tool. We use it. I mean, I use it on a daily basis. But we're certainly not looking at like, oh, how can we replace our design talent or our development talent
Yeah.
with this? It's a force multiplier. And I
Yeah.
think looking at it as a force multiplier, it's a great tool. It's an intern with stunning Dunning-Kruger,
Yeah.
who will, however, happily change their mind if you tell them they're wrong.
Right,
Right? They're
right.
confidently wrong, super confidently wrong all the time. You tell them they're wrong, oh, I'm sorry, yes, you're right. And it'll try and change.
Yeah.
But putting all of our faith in it, I think, is going to be a problem.
I couldn't agree more. And it goes back to that complete experience, notion, which is if you don't really understand end to end for even before inception, like what's going through someone's mind to where you want to get them with your idea, with your business, with, whatever the thing is, the strategy. You're going to vibe code your way into some slot of that, and you're going to be missing a lot of stuff in between, and then the
I
vibe deploy
think
is non-existent, yeah.
it's non-existent. I mean, there's been a couple of things recently. So I've seen a couple of articles come out recently, kind of on my LinkedIn feed, which has been interesting, kind of like going, like, oh, we vibe coded a whole bunch of prototypes at XYZ Enterprise, and they're all worthless. It was fun. We weren't doing anything with them, right? So really, what was the point of that? So I think there's a lot of kind of like, okay, we can do fast iterations, but just for the sake of it, that doesn't make sense. Because again, no humans went at the beginning and like, well, why are we doing this? Like having the design thinking kickoffs, like what is the point of this? What do we hope to achieve? What's the story, right? And all product design and all design is narrative. All design is storytelling, right? At the various levels, but it's all storytelling. If you don't know your story, you don't know your beats and you don't know how you want the story to end, and you just try and wing your way through it, you're not going to get anything that is cohesive. And so I think we're starting to see a little bit like, well, prototypes are fine, but this isn't a product. We're not building product here. We're building ideas. We're building things to vote against. And then there was a thread, was it on Blue Sky? Or maybe it was on Twitter, but I saw it on Blue Sky, of a guy who'd been vibe coding his enterprise SaaS application. And for no, on Replit, I believe. And for no discernible reason, Replit decided
Oh, and it
to
got rid of
delete
his
the production database.
And then it put in a bunch of fake data in its place when it
And they said that it panicked, which is slightly odd for an AI thing to say.
Odd slash scary. Slash funny if you're on the other side of it.
Well, true. I mean, you can argue cogently that why have you got an AI deploying for you? That's crazy. But the fact that that is going to happen and that without warning, the AI can make its own, apparently make its own decisions. And those decisions can be catastrophic.
Where, and you mentioned, you use AI every day, and I think we talked a little bit about this on our walk on the beach. What do you use AI for at Comedia today? What opportunities does it present you?
I think I know on the dev side they'll use some of the code assists just to kind of crank through some of the more sort of lower level work to kind of like we use it in that sense. I use Claude every day. I might use it to kind of help me draft some emails. I might use it to kind of like we've got this RFP. Here's all of our thoughts. Brain dump that into Claude and go like okay, organize this a little bit, then take the output and then we talk about the output. So it's like basically having a junior analyst, right? Like take all of this stuff, all of our things that's in our heads that we've all talked about. Here's a transcript of the meeting we had about it. Organize that, and then we can use that, and then we'll look at an RFP or we'll look at whatever that is, and then discuss, go, oh, that doesn't work, this doesn't work, let's change this. So we use it as, again, a force multiplier because we can use it as kind of like a junior team member. And then we also use it just to kind of like help us speed through some of our thoughts. But it's never at the pointy end of client work. It's always kind of like the back end pieces of those. We don't deploy any AI work into our client work as yet. Potentially, I can see a day where that might happen. But certainly from a design perspective, those pieces are usually internal ideation.
Part of this was you mentioned the other day, and I'm not sure if this is exactly where AI fits in, your current, maybe it's your dev workflows, maybe it was part of design, but probably more part of dev. But you mentioned the other day, and this kind of blew my mind, which was yesterday a client would have paid for, here you paid for one prototype, one output, something like that, and as a force multiplier you're like, yeah, well, same price, now you get three. Something like that. Is that a place where AI comes into play? Is that where AI is
Oh,
speeding it up?
100%. 100%. It's speeding it up in that sense. And then on the business side of boutique agencies, right, there's two ends of that. There is the a whole slew of agencies now, like $5,000 a month to do your branding, your product, your blah,
Oh,
blah, 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 blah,
right.
right? So there's kind of like this race to the bottom. We're going to use AI is going to do all of it. Like, well, okay. So. You've got some of the clients are like, oh, well, I can do it really cheap now. I mean, AI can just do it for you, right? You don't even need to do anything. And so you're like, well, that's not quite how this works. So from a positioning standpoint from this boutique agency, the way that we're looking at it is look, it's the same amount of money, same amount of time. To your point of like, but before, remember we built that one prototype and tested it? We'll three prototypes. We'll test those and we'll take all of the learnings we get from those three now, it's 3x more than we had before, when we move to an MVP stage. we can be more confident of the decisions that we're making because we got more data at the prototype stage.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, where the positioning makes the most amount of sense.
Yeah.
It's not that we can do it cheaper because we're using AI, it's because we can do more.
Yeah. Which is great. I mean, this, I think this is the point. And to me, this is also the point of, of certainly what boutique agencies, consultancies come with, which is this ability not only to be part of the organization, be part of the team, not necessarily like the old IBMs with a, you've got a cubicle and now you're just being paid to
Right.
sit there, but
We have done that, but
you've
yes.
done that. Yeah. And we've all done
Yeah.
that, but here you're being paid to be part of the team and generate value. And you're now able just to generate more value, even without being asked to do that, right? You're going above and beyond and creating and delivering value above and beyond for the same price, above and beyond what you would have paid been paid yesterday to create it. Yeah, I can't imagine a better place to be, really, which is there's still humans. We're just using a new set of tools with our old tools and our old sensibilities, and we're just creating more for you. You like that?
Yeah,
Yeah.
it's almost like you get one teammate for free.
Yeah. That's a good one. That's a good way to look at it.
Right?
Yeah.
If you want a team of three, well, we're giving you four.
Right.
Right? It's just that one of those teammates isn't you.
Right. Yeah. And has all of the world's knowledge, and is also yeah, stunning Dunning-Kruger, like,
Yes,
but
exactly.
also totally willing to say it's wrong and loves to say it's
Yeah.
wrong all day long. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it's very happy about being wrong.
Yeah. Okay, on that note, where do you see then, if you look at, look at Comedia now, look at your peers and how you work and network with some of the peer your peers out there, where do you see them evolving in the next, let's call it 3 to 4 or 5 years, something like that?
But yeah, I mean, I think if you, it's what we were saying, right? I think kind of like your big four or any of those big consultancies are finding themselves in trouble. I think that for all the reasons that we talked about, right? That nobody wants to pay $500,000 for a PowerPoint presentation anymore. And so they're all now like McKinsey, oh, here's our AI solution. They're all pivoting around to do this kind of more actionable piece. They're not going to be able to get out of their own way.
Yeah.
Just the size, the scale, and what they do. I think the boutique agencies, and again, like back in the day, growth at an agency was headcount. Okay, 20, 30, 50, 100, 150, whatever. Like
The
that is how
only
all shown that
way
we
to
are.
scale. Yeah, the only
The
way to
only way to
scale would
scale.
have been add another person. Totally.
Yeah,
Yeah,
totally do.
totally.
And we need to get to them. We got to like 30 odd people, 2019. And then you really get to 30 odd people, like, oh, it's a lot of people.
You gotta,
That payroll's
it's care
quite
and
okay.
feeding.
Payroll's quite scary.
Yeah.
And so you try and build out all these different kind of features inside your agency. So we've got content, we've got dev, we've got da 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 da, all these different things. I think now boutique agencies where the growth is scale of clients or the scale of work, but you have a core of world-class people that you want to work with, and this is the team, right? Say like 12 people like us. And then you find other agencies who do similar but different work. So like a content agency. Or a social agency, a brand agency of like, okay, so here's what we'll do. As and when work comes in and we need to pull other people in, we will create this collective of five agencies. And we've built one, a company called, an agency called Pinwheel. We built Assembly, right? We're trying this experiment now. We've got like, there's five agencies in there and Pinwheel started it and we joined in. And it's that idea of like, well, we, force multiply ourselves, right? We don't do brand, so I can bring in our brand partner. And so having those strong partnerships and having small agencies that can act together as a bigger agency, I think is the future of just like agency and brand work.
Yeah,
I
of
think it
agency
has to
and
be.
brand work and consultancy, full stop, not just
Yeah.
boutique. Yeah.
No,
Yeah.
I think full stop, but I think that's where the boutiques can really shine.
Yeah.
Right, is coming together and working as as one unit. Everyone still has their own P&L, they have their own sectors, their own pieces, but you come together when you need to.
Yeah. Beautiful. All right, I'm gonna round this out because I know we both have a stop here in just a little bit. I'll round this out with a quick lightning round, which I haven't done before, so I'm excited to see how it works. What's a book that every designer or product person should read?
Well, I mean, I'm going to go old school, so don't make me think.
Oh yeah.
Steve Krug, still, again, learn your fundamentals.
Yeah.
You have to have read that book.
Yeah.
I think that you have the Design of Everyday Things. Again, these are classics. But I think if you haven't read those, especially if you're early on in your career, those are two books that you absolutely need to read from a design perspective. Other than that, I think read things that bring you joy, because that's where your creativity is going to come from. That's where your imagination. If it's Batman comics, read Batman comics,
Yeah,
right? I
yeah.
don't think you necessarily have to be like heads down and I've read all these design books now, but all these design leaders. Like, what brings you joy? What sparks your imagination? What are those things? Read those. And read. And reading is always great. I tell my 8-year-old girls, right? I'm just reading, just read, always read, because
Yeah.
that's going to be where the things come in. But yeah, those two books, 100%. If you haven't read those, they have
Totally
to be
good.
part of it.
Totally agree. Totally agree. The fundamental. Every time I think about, especially Design of Everyday Things, every time I go to a door that's push and it's
Oh,
got the
the
handle
pull
on the
push.
outside,
Yeah,
I'm like,
yeah.
thank you, Don Norman.
Yeah.
You're right every time.
Yes.
What's the most overrated design trend right now?
Vibe coding.
Vibe coding, yeah.
Like the idea, like as species, we seem to want to find shortcuts. Right?
Yeah.
Can we find a quicker, faster, better way of doing this? I don't have to spend as much time. So vibe coding, I think, is the most overrated one at the moment. I think, yeah, look what I did. It's like, well, yeah. I mean, I talked to somebody a couple of weeks ago or so. It was like, oh, I know, because I built an enterprise SaaS app over the weekend. It's like, no, you didn't.
Yeah.
No, you
Yeah.
didn't.
Yeah.
And so I think there's kind of like this idea I can just build it and the AI is going to do it for me. So for me, that's the overrated design trend at the
Yeah,
moment.
it's the yeah, I like that. It's the vibe coding, it just reminds me. It's just kind of throwing the something over the wall to some, unnamed entity to just as you would to anyone else without any context to build you something. You're like, I kinda, maybe, I think that's right.
It's like
Yeah.
when we worked, some of the stuff we worked together, you have 48 hours to build this interface, and we build in 48 hours and
Yeah.
go like, this is held up with hope and sticky tape,
Yeah,
right? But here's an idea of what it could be, and let's talk about that.
right.
Vibe coding is good for that, but not like, here's the finished product.
Right. Yeah, totally get it. Yeah. Your favorite prompt or exercise or something like that to kick off a client workshop?
Why are we here?
In the
I think is
grandest
always a good
sense.
one.
Yeah, good.
Just yeah,
Good.
just generally. It's very philosophical at the start of
Right,
this.
right.
But I think that just like a super open-end question, like, well, why are we here? And it'll elicit silence.
Yeah.
Always does. But someone will start to speak, and then you'll start to understand of like, well, who understands why they're here? Or who has a grasp of what they want to get out of this? You can also from a to like a facilitating level of like, well, who's just going to be a yes person and going to follow
Yeah.
because the VP said this, who has
Yeah.
ideas I want to pro. So I found that to be a really useful. So kind of explain to me why we're here. I mean, I got a brief, I got all the stuff, but why are we here?
Right. Yeah, love that. Yeah, and you start to see where people sit in there and what they know and what they don't know. And yeah, good one. Finally, what's giving you your creative fuel lately?
Oh, 2 8-year-olds.
Okay, yeah.
But just the pure joy and imagination and fun that they will find in anything and everything is kind of where most of my creative spark comes from these days.
Yeah.
I mean, running an agency tends to be less creative, less and less creative every day.
Been there.
And so kind of like just hanging out with 2 8-year-old girls and running around and being an idiot is definitely kind of like where that comes from now.
Yeah, that's great. I can't wait for them to get into vibe coding and blow your mind.
Oh, they already are. They're vibe designing. They're kind of
Oh,
like,
even better. Even better. All right. Two last questions, and these aren't necessarily lightning round questions. One is, what else would you say about any if anything, is there anything else you'd want to say about this idea of this boutique agencies, boutique consultancies, and the future therein?
I think it is find your tribe. I think kind of like trying to be, we're just going to do this and we can do everything, I think is like the sense of a full service agency doesn't exist
Got
anymore,
it.
right? We can't be all things to everyone. So find what's your niche? Like, what do you do? And we've not found this yet. I say this as someone
Or
who
maybe you
needs
found it a
to.
bunch of times. Yeah,
Oh,
sure.
yeah.
Right. Sure.
So it's an exercise we're going through of like, well, who are we? How do we sell ourselves? What do we do? Right? Do we
Yeah.
do the intersection of digital and physical? We've done a lot of those. Do we do enterprise SaaS? Well, is enterprise SaaS going away? We've done a lot of that. But are we kind of like an AI focus? And so, but find out what that is and go towards that and build your materials and your outreach towards that. And then find other agencies that either are complementary because they're doing the same things as you, but also a rising tide lifts all ships. So chat with other agents, do the exact same thing as you. Find out what
Right.
they're seeing. Tell them what you're seeing, right? Like together, I don't think boutique agencies should be in competition with each other, other than we all want the same projects. But like as agencies, we should be able to help each other. And I think especially the smaller that we are, the more we need to come together.
That's fantastic. Where do people find you, Chris? Where do they find Comedia? How should they engage with you? Let us know.
So yeah, I'm on LinkedIn, obviously.
That's
Chris
interesting.
Basie.
Yeah.
Comediadesign.com is our website. Chris@comediadesign.com is my email. Always happy to chat with anyone about pretty much anything. So yeah.
Perfect. All right. Thank you so much, Chris. And by the way, and having worked with Chris and his team again many times in the past, what I can say is every time you were brought on, I think of you as the 0 to 1 organization, in every way, like 0 to 1 product, cert slash service experience. Come in, we had 48 hours, build the
Things
zero
go
to
crazy.
one and get it out there and get it using, people using
Yeah.
it, testing it, whatever. So yeah, I appreciate you being here and on this
That's
little
fun.
0 to 1 podcast. So thank you. And I will talk to you soon, man.
Perfect. See you, man.
Have
Take
one.
care.
Good one. Thanks for listening to Design Shift. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to like, subscribe, and leave a quick rating or review. It really helps more designers like you find the show, and it helps me make better shows. And if you're not already subscribed to our awesome newsletter, head over to designshift.me. See you next time.